What's up, Conference USA fans? Welcome into another episode of CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. Spring sports are still in full swing here at Conference USA, but we got the chance to crown two more conference championships this last week, leaving us just with three more conference champions for the rest of the season. And we're going to talk all about it today. But before we get there, we want to make sure that you are following us on all social platforms, X and Instagram. You can find us at CUSA Insider Pod. And if you're watching this right now, thank you so much for tuning into the show. You can find the show video form on YouTube, but if you're still an audio-only listener, one of the OGs, you can find us on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, and also on Spotify. All right, it's not just me here on the show today. We have another guest here back again. What is it, 3 weeks in a row now, I think?
It feels like a lot.
Yeah, you've been here a lot. So Josh Yonas joining us again here on CUSA Insider. We've got a lot to talk about. Men's golf and beach volleyball both crowned conference champions last week. Let's talk a little bit about those. Let's start with men's golf. We'll go in chronological order. I've been here for a while. I've been at almost every men's golf championship. I sadly missed this one this year, and I'm kind of sad that I did because it was nuts.
Yeah, it was crazy. One of the most fun championships to just kind of keep tabs on. First off, congrats to Sam Houston capturing a thrilling day of match play. And they are now the seventh different school to win a conference championship this year.
Wow.
So when we talk repeatedly about how competitive this league is, how much parity there is, I think that is a testament to it, that we've had so many different teams winning conference championships. I love that all the wealth is getting spread around the league. So,
yeah, me too. And it's another team that we added back in 2023 mm-hmm. that has now won a conference tournament. So yeah. I think that is just a testament too to the strength of the teams that we brought in back when all the realignment craziness was going on. Houston.
For sure.
Conference
and
champions.
Kennesaw was another one of those. They got an indoor track championship this past year. I'm sure Delaware and Missouri State will be right in the thick of a lot of sport. You know, Missouri State coming off a great women's basketball season. Delaware's got a few programs that they'll bringing in some incredible teams. But anyways, we went off on a tangent there. Sam Houston, there were playoff holes for everything.
For days.
Everything.
Yes.
Everything needed a playoff hole.
Yep.
It was crazy. New Mexico State and UTEP had to go to a playoff hole to decide the fourth team in match play.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the semifinal round, Sam Houston, they edged Kennesaw State 3-2. UTEP and Liberty needed a playoff hole to settle that semifinal. And then, of course, we needed a couple matchups in the final that went to playoff holes. But ultimately, Sam Houston comes out on top over UTEP. And then New Mexico State's Aiden Thomas, he captured the individual medal. 8 under par. But yeah, it was wild.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
It was. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Like, I mean, you think about golf, serene, great atmosphere, riding around on your golf cart. Everything's really quiet. Like, this is really exciting to follow.
You think Jim Nantz whispering on NBC? Yeah, no, this was not that.
No.
Like, yeah, I said NBC, CBS.
Yes.
You know what I meant.
Oh, sorry, guys.
Yeah.
This was really exciting to follow. And it was fun, too. This was the first time that we broadcast the conference championship, that match play final on ESPN+. So we kind of got to watch almost every shot. Figure out, you know, who was taking the lead. Match play is such a fun format anyway. And not to mention, too, the morning matches that Liberty, who was the number one seed going in, lost to the number four seed, which gave us that matchup between Sam Houston and UTEP. So lots of fun going on there Texarkana at Texarkana Country Club. And like you said, Sam Houston pulled it out, came out on top.
Yeah.
And now we will actually, we're recording this episode on a Tuesday. We'll find out where they're headed for NCAA tomorrow, I think, is when the selection show is.
Yeah,
so
tomorrow,
good luck to the Bearcats.
Well, I don't know if it's worth sharing the details because, again, it will have already aired. So congrats to wherever Sam Houston and New Mexico State's Aiden Thomas end up.
Yeah,
whoever else makes it.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. But we did, you know, we announced that we had some women's teams go and some individuals going to regionals last week. Men's and women's tennis got announced yesterday where those teams are headed. Middle Tennessee facing Duke at 9 a.m. on Friday in Knoxville. And then FIU women facing Stanford at 11 a.m. on Friday in Lubbock. So those are where they ended up for their postseason journeys on the tennis side. But the other championship that was decided this past weekend was beach volleyball. Such a fun sport that we added a few years ago. It's been a really good one to follow, and a lot of fun matches came out of there too.
Yeah, and a super fun championship. I'm sure Dane, our producer back there, can attest to this.
Except for he's getting sand out of everything. He told us all of his computer equipment, all of his camera equipment has sand in it.
Yeah, first beach championship I worked at the Southland Conference down in Corpus Christi. It was the same way. I had sand in my computer, sand in my backpack for like weeks after that. I eventually had to go home, like dump all the sand in the trash can. It's crazy how much that stuff gets everywhere.
Yes.
But beach volleyball, such a fun championship. You got to love just the, it's high tempo. Matches are so fast. There's music playing. It's such an awesome environment. But FAU, we kind of talked about them being, pretty much an overwhelming favorite coming in. They swept right through the field on their way to hoisting the trophy down there in Youngsville, Louisiana. They earned the number 13 seed in the NCAA tournament. They'll face number 4, Loyola Marymount, tomorrow. Again, this will be coming out Thursday. So
Wednesday.
So this will be, on Friday at 8 a.m. Central.
Okay.
They'll be facing Loyola Marymount. I was trying to, I was trying to think ahead there, and I was like, oh, I'll say tomorrow, but.
Got it.
Yeah, that's on me. And then the winner will advance to the Saturday's quarterfinals against either USC or North Florida. So, congrats to the Sandy Owls.
Three NCAA tournament games on Friday.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
8, 9, and 11.
All right.
Yeah. So get your ESPN Plus subscriptions.
If we haven't said that enough already, so now's the time, everyone.
Yes.
Because we have a lot of other stuff coming up on ESPN Plus as well. Like we mentioned, softball and baseball.
Mm-hmm.
They're still going on. We've got an outdoor track and field championship coming up, which will be on ESPN Plus as well. But let's talk a little bit about what's happening let's go with baseball first.
Eric and I agreed on last week.
I wish I had come up with that, but I didn't. Baseball going on right now. We've got 3 more weekends left of the regular season before we head to the championship in Lynchburg, Virginia, and that's May 21st through the 25th. There's a lot going on right now. Like you said, 3 games separate the top 5 teams right now. But DBU is sitting in number 1 spot with their record of 13-5 at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of shakeup we've seen and the amount of teams, right? Like it was, for a minute there, it was WKU. Then it was like, oh, yeah, La Tech's coming back into the fold. And then it's like, oh, well, DBU's kind of coming full circle.
And here comes Kennesaw State.
Yeah. These two programs are both 8-2 in their last 10 games. Two of the hottest teams in Conference USA right now, setting up for what should be potentially a regular champion, regular season championship series in Dallas, May 9th to the 11th. We'll start with DBU. Went to the Love Shack and took 2 of 3 from La Tech, something that not a lot of teams can do. We talked about it a few weeks ago when we talked to Lane Burrows and kind of previewing this brutal stretch of series that they had,
which is not over yet.
We'll get to that. The ability to defend their home turf, we thought was going to be very important. Unfortunately, again, dropped 2 of 3 to DBU. Ryan Borberg, our pitcher of the week, was huge in Sunday's rubber match. He threw 7 innings, struck out 6, only allowed 2 hits to this La Tech lineup. That is something right there. So big series win for the Patriots. And then, Kennesaw State moved into 2nd place. I don't know if we would have thought that, we would be saying that, a few weeks ago, much less at the beginning of the season. So a big series win for them as well.
Yeah, we talked about, at the top of the show, new teams coming in with strengths that they already had. Baseball was definitely one of Kennesaw State's moving into the league, to a great baseball league, though. So we weren't quite sure where they would end up.
Slot in.
Exactly. But they had an absolutely incredible series victory over Liberty this weekend, who, as we mentioned a couple weeks ago, Liberty was losing a few here and there, and then they just kept losing. We'll see if they can make it up here in the last 3 weeks of the regular season. But Nate Anderson is who I want to talk about. 9 RBIs on the series on the weekend. 8 of them coming in his game on Sunday for a program record single game, 8 RBIs.
That's
crazy.
Insane.
Which included a grand slam, everyone. It was great. It was really fun to watch. Yeah. If you haven't seen the highlight already, go to Kennesaw State Baseball's Twitter page. It's really fun to watch. But yeah, they're just moving right on up into contention here for the regular season title. But like you said, that matchup I've got circled on my calendar too. DBU, Kennesaw State here in Dallas should be a really good one.
Yeah, and I mean, we should try not to get too ahead of ourselves right here, because yeah, we have another big one coming up this week. You kind of alluded to it just a second ago, but La Tech travels to Bowling Green to take on Western Kentucky, which obviously this is a Western Kentucky team that after the way this past weekend played out, getting swept by FIU, they've got to be frustrated, right?
Yeah.
Because we thought that they were not necessarily going to run away with the league, but we thought they were going to stay near the top, up until the tournament. This is kind of their chance to get back on track a little bit, back on their home turf. But with a very talented La Tech team who I'm sure they're angry as well coming off that mm-hmm. series loss to DBU. That's kind of developed into a little bit of a rivalry in the past few years since DBU joined as an affiliate.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So that's our series of the weekend or series of the week, Louisiana Tech at WKU. Bulldogs are headed to Bowling Green. You can head over to conferenceusa.com, visit our schedule page for the times and where you can watch those games. I think it'll be a good one. But like you said, WKU is looking to bounce back, and so is Louisiana Tech. So it should be interesting. But now, the moment that you, I know, have been waiting for, Josh, we're going to talk some softball. And I'm really excited to talk about this. Not only do we get to talk about some craziness that is shaking out here in the final weekend of the regular season, but also we get a really fun interview here in a couple of minutes with Jacksonville State's head coach. And so I want you to talk us through a little bit about how softball is going here leading into the final weekend.
Yeah. And this is one that I've really kind of been sitting on since the beginning of the season, because for those of you who may not know and be familiar with this Jack State softball program, Jana McGinnis was at the helm for decades there in Jacksonville. She made the tough decision to step down heading into this year, and handed the reins right over to her top assistant, Julie Boland, who has been there for 23 years as her assistant, played for her for 4 years at Jack State.
What a story.
Which is just, crazy to think about that, you've been there that long that you played for a coach and then took over for her at the end of her career. But it was an awesome interview. Julie's great. It was cool to hear just kind of a little bit more background on her getting that opportunity. The ability to have Jana still involved with the program. She talks to her almost daily, still learning stuff from her as she kind of develops her own identity as a head coach within this program. But an incredible interview. Stick around for that for sure. So softball. Coming off a weekend where, I feel like we hadn't seen a whole lot of sweeps. And even if there were, they weren't, there wasn't a ton of implications on them. But this week we had three that really stuck out just as we get, closer to the end of the regular season. We'll start with one. Liberty swept La Tech in Ruston to clinch the regular season championship and the number one seed.
That's checked off for them.
That's checked off. They're good. They can kind of, I don't think they'll rest this weekend,
sure,
but you can definitely go in a little easier because you already kind of know your path as the number one seed, what to expect there. But Rachel Roop really set the tone with two homers in the series opener. But really the storyline in this one was the Lady Flames' ability to come back in games.
Mm-hmm.
They have 17 come from behind victories this season.
Wow. I did not realize that.
Yeah. Which is fourth in the nation behind Auburn, North Texas and Grand Canyon.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and it felt like, every time they got down in games, I remember watching them when they were in the Clearwater Invitational earlier this season. They fell behind in almost every game. And I was like, oh, gosh, here we go. And then they would manage to claw back. And I was like, okay, And so I learned to kind of never really count them out. They showed that this weekend again. They outscored the Bulldogs 16-0 from the fourth inning on.
Wow.
Across these three games. So the ability to, again, just stay resilient, kind of stick to what you know, what
late
you do
inning
well.
Magic.
Yes, late inning magic. So Lady Flames, they kind of, again, check that box. And then
it's the only box we can check at this current moment, isn't it?
It's pretty much the only one that we can check. Yeah, there's still a lot to be decided going into the final weekend of the season. I think it was when I was looking again, teams 4 through 9 are separated by 2 games.
Woohoo!
And they're fighting for 3 spots. So only three of those teams can get to Bowling Green next week. But Jack State, they were the only other one who's been able to clinch a tournament berth so far. They had a huge sweep over Sam Houston this past weekend. Again, that was kind of a big one for Julie and her team to kind of take sole possession of second. They kind of, you know, they can take a little bit of a sigh of relief. They still have a big one this weekend. They go to Bowling Green. I'm not sure. I meant to ask her if they were planning on just staying.
Oh, yeah, because that's Sunday where the conference then, championship
right, they gotta
is.
They got to be there Tuesday for a practice day anyway. But we shall see. And then New Mexico State was the other one. Kept its tournament hopes alive with a sweep of Middle Tennessee. And who, I mean, got to talk about Desiree. If we're talking New Mexico State, you got to talk Desiree Spearman.
Yeah, you can't leave her out, that's for sure.
I know it's been kind of a couple tough weeks for them, for her specifically, but Sunday, she did it all. I mean, she was the MVP of Sunday, for sure. 3 for 3 at the plate, had a solo home run, and then she pitched a complete game gem. Struck out 9, allowed just 2 hits to the Blue Raiders. So she was crucial in wrapping that one up.
I have a question for you that you might not be able to answer. Is anyone in the nation as good of a two-way player as she is?
There are a few. There are definitely a few out there.
I think it's
actually,
a little different
shout out
in
to
softball
Delaware.
Than it is
Morgan Hess at Delaware is one of those where she has been an extremely elite pitcher and hitter. But they're starting to pop up a little bit more. But it's definitely a rare breed.
I mean, she's definitely in the top 10.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Maybe top 5. Top 5. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. And then WKU, they didn't technically sweep. They went undefeated. They ended up finishing with a tie on Sunday, which it was, you know, for me, about to settle some of these tiebreakers and seeding scenarios. Not what I wanted to see, but, you know.
Well, it is what it is.
It is what it is. We take whatever we get. But they had a 3-0-1 week that also included a win over Louisville. Their first one since 2007. So big win for the Hilltoppers there. And really this week was, and they were rightfully awarded for it too. Morgan Sharp had 3 multi-hit games on the week. And then freshman Erica Hogue.
We'll just go with it. Erica.
Yeah. Sorry, Erica. She had a great week. She pitched in all 4 of these games, pitched a complete game shutout against Louisville, and then also contributed in each of their 3 games down in South Beach. So
I think this is like a pivotal week for WKU for sure, because we've been talking about whether or not the curse of the host of the softball championship actually making the softball tournament was going to come back. It was there for quite a few years and then it went away for a few years. And we were like, is the curse coming back?
Yeah,
they're definitely doing the right things at the right time, I think.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you look back, I think in their last 13 games, they're 9-3-1. So there was a minute there where we were a little worried. They were about 3-7, I think, 10 games in the conference play. And we were like, oh no,
is the
create a little
back.
Bit of an awkward situation, but the Hilltoppers, they haven't sealed it up quite yet, but they're sitting pretty in 4th place right now, with a chance to kind of wrap that up this weekend against Jack State. And we'll kind of jump right into it from there. I think that's the series to watch. It's kind of a no-brainer. Jack State visiting Western Kentucky. It's kind of the Gamecocks' chance to make a last statement before the tournament, and really establish themselves as potentially the biggest threat to Liberty winning this tournament again. And then again, like I said, the Hilltoppers still fighting for a berth in the softball championship. Does being back at home, the extra little comfort, you know, give them the edge they need to at least get a win. I think that's, I haven't looked through it all, but I think if you get at least one win, you're probably good.
Right.
So.
That's true. And remind me again, only 6 teams make it to the softball championship.
Yep, only
correct?
6 teams. Yeah, so top 2 teams receive a bye, and then the first round games will be the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth teams.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a tongue twister.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And so that championship is next week, May 7th through the 10th. All of the games are on ESPN Plus, except for the championship final, which is on CBS Sports Network on Saturday, May 10th. Should be a lot of fun watching this weekend. Bracket gets released on Sunday afternoon after the final game is over. Mm-hmm. But like we said, we've got an interview that Josh conducted for us here yesterday with Jacksonville State head softball coach Julie Boland. So we're going to give you guys a chance to listen to that right now.
Joining us now, head coach of the Jacksonville State Gamecocks, Julie Boland, in her first year at the helm in Jacksonville. Julie, thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely, Josh. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So first season as head coach of the Gamecocks, obviously been a pretty successful season for you so far. What have been the keys to success just for you and for the team to get to this point?
Yeah. You know, you say it's been a successful year so far, and I'm actually having a lot of fun with this team. For me right now, the success is the buy-in of all the players, as me being head coach, the trust that they have in me. So I'm super thankful for the players and my staff. You know, my staff, we got to be coworkers first. And then when Coach McGinnis retired and I took over, thankfully, they put their trust in me as well. So being successful for me is that first and foremost. And then second, you know, the wins that we have, super blessed. I think we have a lot of freshmen starting for us this year, for them to come in and grab hold of what we're trying to do as a program moving forward. I think that's helped us get a lot of wins, and we have good leadership. Our older players are doing really well as far as showing them the ropes, saying this is what we need out of you, and they respond to it. So I think all of that in a bubble has helped us be successful this year.
Yeah, you mentioned it right off the top there with that buy-in. What moment do you think it was this season where you really felt like that started to take place and blossom?
Oh, good question. I think early on in the year, it was we weren't sure. We tried something new this year, Josh, and it was freshman first in everything we did. So the fall was a little rocky as far as the freshmen getting their feet wet and doing things first. So, for example, drills, meals, they got to eat first. They got their gear first, to where in a lot of programs, freshmen are last and everything. So we knew they had to make an impact for us. So I got a little bit of a pushback from the upperclassmen as far as why do the freshmen get to go first and everything. But I think when we started our opening weekend and our upperclassmen saw what an impact our younger kids were making, our freshmen were making, they were like, okay, we get it now. This is going to be a lot of fun. This is going to be a fun ride. So I think that opening weekend coming together, seeing the freshmen play like they know how to play, our upperclassmen playing like they knew how to play, and all of us being on the same page is what we want for goals for this season. And them just buying in of saying, oh, okay. Like there was the light bulb. And then it was okay, here we go.
Yeah, that's awesome. That blend of the newcomers, the young players, and those veteran players that you mentioned as well, has that been a challenge for you to kind of work through that relationship? And how much have you leaned on, you know, the veteran players like Kat Carter in that mm-hmm. pitching staff to help bring along the younger players?
Yeah, I think you said it. Our seniors and our junior, of course, Kat Carter is our senior pitcher. She controls us in the circle. She is a lot, watch how I do it and follow my lead. So she's not a big barker as far as you need to do it this way, you have to do it this way. It's more, give me the ball. This is how we present ourselves as a Gamecock. This is how hard we play. This is the determination that we have as Gamecocks. And our freshmen are like, okay, if you're doing it that way, that's how I'm going to do it. And then our other returners, we're fortunate to have Morgan Nowakowski in center field. She's a redshirt junior, so she's really in the senior class, but she's fortunately having another year with us next year. She's another one that's a lead by example. Watch how I do it and follow my lead. So we're really blessed to have action leaders and not just upperclassmen that just want to say this is how you do it without the action to follow it.
Right. How would you describe the identity of this year's Gamecock squad?
You know, they define themselves and they say, we want to be gritty, we want to be resilient, and we want to be determined. And they have proven that. So their words, they proved it. That's what one of the questions I asked early on in the season is, how do you want your family members to sit in the stands? How do you want them to describe them to your neighbors? Like, how do you want them to go home and describe this team to your friends, your high school friends, your high school teammates' parents? What identity do you want to have for this 25 team? And they came up with a list. They said, this is what we're working for. This is how we want to be known. This is how we want people to talk about us. So, Josh, they defined it on their own. And I think they're staying true to it. They're determined. They're gritty. They're fun to watch. They're a fun squad to watch.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love that they kind of took ownership of really setting what that was going to look like for the squad. All right, so let's talk obviously filling some very, very big shoes with the departure of Coach McGinnis. And I shouldn't say departure because I know that she's been extremely involved in the program. Still, you know, her face is still around plenty. But, you know, I know that's no small task. How did you approach stepping into this role? And just talk me through that whole process of, you know, obviously you'd been there for decades as her assistant and then getting the opportunity to step up into this role.
Yeah, absolutely. To say Jana is still around the program is to say it lightly. I probably talked to her 3-4 times a week. She actually just left. My alarm went off and I said, Coach, I got a podcast. You got to go. So we talk regularly, you know, not only just coworkers and a great mentor and leader for me and my professional life. I've been around her for 28 years. She recruited me. So she has become one of my best friends throughout the years. So not only do we talk softball, but we also talk everything, life, her family. Like she was just telling me a story about her nephew who's going through a breakup. So, you know, it's, she's always involved, but for her to still be involved, for the transition to happen, she was one of the first ones that said, Julie, you're the right one for this job. You're the only one for this job. You're going to hold this program together. Cause we have a really cool legacy as far as, she's been here 31 years and then I took over. I've been here 28 years. I played for her. So we have a huge alumni base and we know all of our alumni personally. We know the players. So I think that's a really cool aspect of just the Gamecock program. And so when she said that, I want you to take the helm. I'm pushing for you to get the job. She said, you have to do one thing and that's be yourself. You cannot be me. So I've taken that advice and I've ran with it. And of course, to the core, like our values, the way we want to run a program, it's all the same because I've learned from her. And with her success, it's always do the right thing first. So it's not player-based, it's always program-based. But the team first, do the right thing. So at our core, we coach the same way as far as building a program. But of course, I'm going to do things a little bit different. And she pushes me to do that. Be your own self. Be your coach. You cannot be me. So I'm very, very thankful for her, her mentorship, her leadership, but ultimately her friendship.
Yeah, and that's a perfect segue. And I remember I had a similar conversation with Jordan Clark when she took over at Florida Atlantic, obviously in a very similar, you know, taking over for a legend there. But how have you been able to put your own stamp on the program while maintaining a lot of what you just mentioned in just some of, you know, the everyday things that make up the team?
Yeah, I think a little bit of what I do different, I sit down and talk to the team every day. We break down things every day as far as mentality, expectations. And that's something we didn't do previously, and that's okay. But it was like, let's just get to work, to where now I'm more of a, let's break it down. Let's talk about the nitty gritties. Let's talk about the mentality, expectations. So we spend a little bit more time talking things through so we can all be on the same page. So there's no mix up as we go. So, but other than that, I think, the other big thing is I'm very, detail oriented. And I think that's why she kept me around for so long being her assistant. Not much goes by that I don't notice. Sometimes that drives me crazy. Sometimes that drives my assistants crazy, but, I'm very, very organized and to a T. So I try to keep that in line as well. So I would say that's where we're different.
I'm sure if I asked you, you know, just what have you learned from Jana, this would have to turn into, you know, a 6-episode podcast. But if you could maybe, you know, pin it down to one or two things, what have been the biggest things that you've learned from her under her tutelage and then even this season in your first year as head coach?
Yeah, that's a great question, Josh. I'd say the biggest thing is, I think I mentioned it before, just do the right thing. You want to put the people first before the game. So what she has taught me through that is you got to think of the bigger picture. You have to do the right thing because you're building a program. You're not just building a weekend or a season. It's the program that you want to look at. And then on top of that, it's treat people the right way. Because at the end of the day, this is just a game and there's a bigger picture in it. So you got to treat the people the right way, because once you treat them the right way. Players, managers, trainers, coaches, administration, they're going to have your back and they're going to want to do even more for you. They're going to want to play harder for you. So doing the right thing and treating people the right way.
Yeah, that's great.
Pretty simple. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Let's get back to this season. Julie Bolin's Jack State Gamecocks. The team is 9-1 in the last 10 games, coming off a big sweep against Sam Houston. Heading into the final weekend of the regular season, you're sitting alone in second place. How do you feel about your team's momentum as we near the conference tournament?
Yeah, I am super proud of them. We have really focused on one game at a time, looking at what's in front of us. We can't look ahead. We can't look backwards. We can only look at what's right in front of us. And they have really kind of flipped a switch. Like you said, 9 out of 10 games. I don't think I realized that till just now, but it's they're determined. They're on a path. They want to prove to everybody how good they are, where we belong. And they just kind of have a mentality of, we're going to fight together. We're going to mess up, but we're going to mess up together, and we're going to have each other's back and push forward. And I think the last 9 games, 10 games, this past weekend sweep, it was a tough one. It was kind of chaotic for a while, but I think all of those games teach us for postseason. They give us experience and they build our character. So I'm just super proud of the fight and the determination that they have.
As you prepare for the tournament, having to play, multiple days in a row, potentially multiple games in a day, obviously your team's biggest strength this year has been the depth of your pitching staff. How mm-hmm. fortunate are you to have the amount of quality arms in that group? And how comfortable does that make you heading into the postseason environment?
Yeah, you said it, Josh. I am super comfortable with them. Our depth and our staff, they're all returners, so they all have the experience. And thankfully, they have all been put in a situation this season that will help us in postseason. We can start any 4 pitchers at any given time. So when we break down film and when we scout another team that we're about to see, we try to do the best matchup possible for our pitching staff versus the opposing team's hitters. So our pitching staff in the circle too, they have bought into working together. They know they cannot do it alone. So they know I'm going to get us as far as I can go, and then I'm going to hand the ball over, and I have full trust and confidence in the next pitcher. So with that kind of mentality, it's really amazing to see, because a lot of time pitchers are like, I want the ball and I don't want anybody else to have it. But this mentality of this staff this year, it's I'm going to get us as far as we can go. I'm going to give it my best. And when my time's up, it's up, and I am going to cheer my heart out for the next pitcher. So I'm super, super fortunate. And Coach Holly, our pitching coach, has done a great job with them as well. So I couldn't ask for more.
As you prepare for, that first game going into the tournament, as a first-year head coach, what is going to be your message to the team?
Josh, I don't know. It's my first rodeo. I don't think much changes. I think, the end of this season, rolling into postseason, we got to focus on the game in front of us. Nothing else matters except the one game in front of us. Every pitch compete, whether it's in the box, whether it's we're throwing the pitch, whether it's the ball getting hit to us, every pitch, we have to compete. And we are always in a position to win as long as the game's still going on. So if they can keep that mentality, I think we're going to have a lot of fun in the tournament.
All right. So on CUSA Insider, we like to do a segment that we call CUSA Eats. So when our fans, our administrators, whoever are traveling around the country to go see some games, we want to make sure they have the top recommendations of places to eat. Now, you should feel pretty comfortable answering this because you've been in Jacksonville, quite a while now. So I got to know, where are your favorite places to eat? What's your favorite dish in town?
Yep. So besides talking softball, food is my next hot topic. So I love this question. My favorite place in Jacksonville is The Rocket. Hole in the wall barbecue place. It looks like a shack. On the sign, there's a pig. But it's barbecue, chicken, salads, hamburger, the best hamburgers in town. They have my vote for best hamburgers in town.
We went there when we were there for the football championship. That was one of the top places they recommended. And I was like, all right, we drove past on the way in. I was like, really? That's the top recommended place. And, it's crazy. Cause you can, you know, split the double cheeseburger meal for $13 and it's enough food for, probably enough food for three people, but yeah,
that's the twin cheeseburger basket. That's definitely on the list.
Yep. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. But then another good place would be Cooter Brown's. And I don't think they've changed the inside of the Rocket or Cooter Brown since the 80s. So it's been the same since I've been in school here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Another incredible one that we got the luxury of trying while we were there. So we ate our way through Jacksonville, even though we were only there for a couple of days. So,
oh, yeah. Easy to do there.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, Julie, thank you so much again for joining me. Best of luck as you go into the final weekend of the regular season. And we'll see you in Bowling Green in just a little over a week.
Yes, thank you so much, Josh. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much to Julie Boland, Jacksonville State head softball coach, for joining us here on CUSA Insider. We have a lot of fun stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks, the final weekend of the regular season here at Conference USA for softball. Softball bracket release upcoming on this Sunday. So next week, we have a really fun show in store for you. We've got some people traveling for the softball championship, so we're going to mix it up for you just a little bit. We are actually going to be releasing an episode next Tuesday, so be on the lookout for that on May 6th. We are going to preview the entire 2025 softball championship for you. Joe Castellano from CBS Sports Network, our play-by-play guy who will be calling the championship on Saturday, will be joining Josh and I here on the program. So be on the lookout for that one. It's bound to be a fun one. All right, everyone. If you're not already, please follow us on social media at CUSA Insider. Insider Pod. That's important. And then also find us on YouTube so you can watch the show. But if not, keep listening to us on audio. We enjoy all of the listens. And definitely be sure that if you have any bit of feedback for us, that you email us at CUSAinsider@conferenceusa.com. All right, everyone. Good luck to our teams playing in the postseason this week. But that is all I have for you today. You are listening to CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm Sarah Rudolph, signing off.